T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hello and welcome to Better Living, a show about the people and organizations that make an impact in our area. I'm your host, Nick Carissimi. K9 Search Team Lone Star Search and Rescue are my guests today. My first guest, Captain Terry Benjamin, is co-founder of Lone Star Search and Rescue. He also serves as battalion commander for the Texas State Guard. Sir, how are you doing today?
Wonderful, thank you.
Did I get all that right?
You did.
All right. I had another representative of the Texas State Guard on the show, but that show actually hasn't aired yet. So in radio world, you're our first representative from the Texas State Guard. Let's talk a little bit about that just to kind of get things going, and then we are going to spend the rest of the interview talking about Lone Star Search and Rescue.
Great.
What do you do with the Texas State Guard?
Well, I'm a battalion commander, which means I run a battalion within a regiment. Within the Guard, you have the ACC, which is the Army Component Command.
Okay.
Then you have the regiments, and within the regiments, there's battalions. And there's 3 battalions in our regiment, and I'm the commander of one of those 3 battalions.
All right. How long have you been with the organization?
A little over 3 years.
Was this something that you got into after you left the service? Because I read on your website, which is LoneStarSAR.org, that you served in the Army?
I did. 18 years active in the Army.
And then you were also a police officer?
I was a police officer for 10 years as well.
Okay. So when did you find the Texas State Guard?
About 4 years ago, General Hastings, who you also interviewed, we were down in Stephenville visiting with our daughter, and General Hastings happened to be standing in front of me with wearing his pilot wings, and I'm a pilot, or was a pilot in the Army, and saw that. We began to talk, and then he started recruiting me for the State Guard, and he's quite convincing, so I got involved in it, and I've loved it ever since.
What did you fly in the military?
Blackhawks and Hueys.
Okay. I had an uncle that flew Blackhawks.
Great helicopters.
The, Air Force. Very interesting. All right, so you're with this organization, and what General Hastings talked to me about was the major component of what you guys are doing is search and rescue to a certain extent. You're showing up places, disaster areas, that kind of stuff, and helping the people that are there in a bunch of different ways. What are you doing with the Texas State Guard?
Everybody in the Texas State Guard is trained the same. So each one of us can be pulled out of our position and go to any other area with the Texas State Guard. So we're all trained exactly the same. So shelters, search and rescue, points of distribution, all of those things, all of our folks are trained across the board. So we're all interchangeable.
Okay.
And that during the hurricane, we were able to do that. We were able to take small units from within the battalions and the regiments, move them down to other units, and work seamlessly together. We worked like a charm, obviously, was quite successful, and we did some great stuff.
How long were you down there for the hurricane?
I personally was down there for just under 3 weeks. Obviously, the Guard was down there for just over a month, I believe.
What does the Texas State Guard need? I know that you guys are kind of pushing for recruitment right now. You've been a part of this organization for a long time. What do you need? If somebody is interested in joining the Texas State Guard, what can they expect? What do you guys need?
We need good people who are dedicated, that want to help fellow Texans, that want to be part of a team and do great things. That's our only requirement. Obviously, there's going to be some physical requirements. There's going to be some age requirements. But for the most part, anybody from 18 to 70 can join, or under 70 can join the Guard. And there's a place for everybody. We can, from radio operators to, I mean, we've got guys with master's and doctorate degrees that just want to do their part and have come in after they've done all these things. They're in their, you know, midlife. They're captains of industry and decide that they want to be part of this. So. And it's a great team. It's an amazing bunch of people.
One of the things that I learned about this is that it's a great way for guys to fill that gap when they were in the service for a long time, or maybe they were not and are looking to fill that part of their life. This is a great way to just put something in place that helps you feel that you're part of a group again and that you're getting something done. Has that been your experience with the organization?
Absolutely. Now, we've got combat veterans. We've got guys that have never been in any type of military, and they work great together. But for me, I miss that camaraderie. I miss being part of that team. And these guys are amazing. The people I work with are just some amazing people, and they really, really want to help. Like I said, it doesn't matter what your experience level is. There's a place for you, and there's things for you to do.
If you want to be a part of the Texas State Guard, just Google them. That is probably the best and easiest way to figure out how you can fit into that organization. I do want to switch now and start talking about Lone Star Search and Rescue. When I set the interview up, I misunderstood at first. I thought that you were part of the search team for the Texas State Guard. I didn't realize that these are two separate entities. Now, you mentioned that you were in the military and you were also a police officer, but I didn't see anything in there working with search and rescue or specifically working with dogs. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're not wrong at all. I started the Army as a Cav Scout. So my job was tracking people down, tracking the enemy down. And that's where I learned to track footprint by footprint. It's called man tracking. I love doing it, and I've done it ever since then. I did it as a police officer, was very successful, caught lots of bad guys doing that, and decided that I wanted to do more. So I got involved with San Diego County Rescue. I was a police officer in San Diego County. Search and Rescue, became a mounted officer. Mm. And worked with them. So I was both a tracker and a mounted officer. I was medically retired. I was injured as a police officer. So, and my wife and I met just after that. She was in Dallas, and that was a good enough place for me. And now, my family's from Texas. My grandmother's from Oklahoma, a good Choctaw Indian. This was a good place for me. And I had some other family here as well.
I was going to ask where San Diego County was because I figured it was going to be in Texas. But you're actually talking about San Diego and California.
San Diego, California.
There's always a new county or city in Texas that I learn about every single day, so I don't feel like that's too crazy to ask. But here you are back in Dallas. What prompted you to start a search and rescue team, specifically your own?
Well, I'd always loved working with dogs. I'd always loved being part of that organization. We had dogs in San Diego County. So when I got here, I met the director of another team, and I was interested in being a dog handler and became a dog handler for them. Started out as a flanker, spent a couple years doing that, but I had a great border collie named Haas that was just a hellion and needed a job. So we put him to work, and he was an amazing search dog. So I was on that team for quite some time.
Now, you learned how to be a tracker by yourself. You said the term you use is man tracker?
Man tracker, and I was taught by the Army.
Right, okay. So you learn that skill, and that's going to be, I'm assuming, very different than actually doing the same kind of work with an animal. Is it easier with the dog, or are they just completely different disciplines?
Well, they're not necessarily completely different disciplines. And in fact, that was one of the things that the director of that team and I decided to do together, and that was put tracking with the dogs. So by teaching the other handlers to track, they were able to verify what their dog was doing and see the tracks that they were looking for. So it became a multidiscipline job. So we became very successful doing that, tracking right along with the dogs as they worked.
Do you see things that the dog doesn't see? Obviously, the dog is going to pick up things that we can't. Is it your job to direct the dog and to figure out where to go based on the things that you have learned in your experience?
It's my job to make sure that the dog gets into the area that he should be and is safe. But we let the dog determine the search. Obviously, they're the ones with the nose. They're the ones that can find the human scent. And it's an invisible scent that we can't see. So it's just my job to get them there, to direct them the right way, but it's the dog's search, and they are in charge of that part of it. And they come to learn that we can't smell, that we're no good at that.
So the dog knows that?
Knows that...
That you don't have this ability that they do.
That's part of the training. That's why it takes so long to train a handler and dog, because they have to learn that we can't smell, And we have to learn to read when they're telling us they have that scent. So it's a partnership where we learn to talk to each other.
I'm speaking with Captain Terry Benjamin. He is in the Texas State Guard. He is also the director and co-founder of Lone Star Search and Rescue. You can find them online at lonestarsar.org. I think we got a little bit ahead of ourselves. Talk to me just about what Lone Star Search and Rescue does. What does this organization do specifically?
We are a volunteer, nonprofit canine search and rescue team. When you hear that law enforcement has called for the dogs, quite often we or a team like us are those dogs. And the intent, the dog can cut down that search for a lost person significantly. What, you know, maybe hundreds of acres, we can take and put our dogs on a trail or a scent, and they can take us right to the victim. We did that recently in a search just a couple weeks ago where the police had already gone out and searched, run out of ideas, and they brought us in. When we did that, within 20 minutes, we had found our victim.
And so they had been searching for how long?
About 4 hours.
So they've been searching for 4 hours, and it took you guys 20 minutes?
That's correct.
Why isn't it an immediate call? Why don't police units have, or departments, why don't they already have dog teams like this? If you're that effective, why isn't it more common? How is this not an institution?
In a lot of states like Maine, Utah, and some other bigger wilderness states, they do. The dogs are part of their organization. They're funded by the police departments. Here, because we're a cross between an urban and wilderness, it's not as prevalent.
Okay.
There's dogs that do mountain rescue, avalanche. Our dogs are all trained for disaster as well as water, cadaver or human remains. So we have to be a lot more diversified in the way that we train our dogs and what we train them to do.
That was really going to be one of the main questions I wanted to ask, is what jobs you guys focused on as an organization. Is it a kid goes missing, we can't find them? Is it searching for dead bodies? Is it trying to find people in rubble? Are you saying that it's a mix of all of those disciplines?
It is. If you think about it, it's all doing the same thing. It's just teaching the dog to switch to what it is that they're doing. So the dogs are capable. Think about law enforcement dogs. The dogs will be able to work drugs as well as be a protection dog, right?
Sure.
So there's no reason why the dogs can't work more than one discipline. We've taught them across all, and we consider wilderness or open area one discipline. Disaster or collapse building, that's another one. Water is another discipline for us. And then human remains is another discipline for those dogs. And we start the dogs at the easiest, which is wilderness. Take them out in the middle of the field and they can find somebody, or in the woods. Once they learn that skill and they get comfortable with that, then we can move them on to the collapse building, and we can move them on to the water searches and then human remains detection.
What is the most difficult job these dogs have? Is it, and I would guess, an urban environment, because you have so much going on. As you were saying, you start them in the wilderness. It's a more natural place. There's probably going to be less smells happening, or at least they're going to be very distinct. In an urban environment, I would guess that would be tough. What is the hardest job for these dogs?
You're exactly right, Nick. The urban environment is the toughest thing we do, not just because of all the extra scents and all the things going on, but the adiabatic cooling. The heating and cooling in the city is much more prevalent than it is out in the wilderness, so those scents can be masked by other things. But it's also the traffic and the people moving and all the other distractions that go on. Urban is a tough place to do our job.
How do you know that the dog is doing the right thing, especially in an urban environment? Now, you're talking about variations in temperature affecting scent patterns. These are things that I've never even really thought about. So when these dogs are out there, especially in a tough environment, how do you know that they're doing the right thing and that you can trust their nose?
Well, in that urban environment, we would most likely use what we call a scent-specific dog. And that's not another discipline. It's another part of that discipline that we teach them. So that means we give them an article of clothing, or they can scent off a seat that the person was sitting in, something along that line, so that they know they're looking for one single person in this jungle of people. And then we ask them to find that person. Now, or like we talked about, the big part of what we do is the handler learning to read the dog. Mm. And in learning to read the dog, you know when your dog's working and when he's not working. So we can see those behaviors in him. And it's pretty obvious. Once we and we use the F or the find word, I guess I can say that we always spell it in front of the dogs.
We don't have any dogs in studio today, if you guys are wondering, listening at home. But that is really funny that I'm
still
trained to do that. Right?
Still want
to
spell it. We use the find word, and so they know to start their search. Well, when we're working specific, we use find that. Other teams may use other words. Other handlers may use other words. But that's the word that we've decided. So when we tell them to find that, we ask them to smell that, which is that scent article, and then we ask them to find that. So they understand they're looking for that specific person.
Is a dog going to go to a building? Is a dog going to walk straight up to a front door? How specific does it need to get on your end?
The dogs, as part of their training, are taught to put paws on, which means touching them. Mm. This is a big party for them. This is a game. you know, search and rescue dogs aren't like a lot of other dogs that the police dogs or dogs that are used to help people with disabilities. We want our dogs touched and played with. Now, not when they're working, obviously, but we look for that socialization so they want to be around people. And the happiest thing they do is find people. So when they find them, they get this big party, they get their reward, whatever it happens to be, and it's a happy, happy time for them. So we want them to put paws on, and if they can't put paws on, get us as close to putting paws on.
My understanding is with service animals, look but don't touch. This is a real important thing. No matter what the dog is doing, hands off. It's not to be pet. You're saying something different.
Well, and
yes or no?
Yes. I absolutely am. Socialization is them liking humans, them being part of it. Humans are the big interaction that we have, so we want our dogs to be excited about that. So, yes, when we're out, like any service animal you'd think, we take them into Home Depot and into restaurants and other places so they get that socialization. The more places that they can go and things that they can do, the better they're going to be in every situation.
Off mic, I just got a good tip. Let's stick with what I was saying earlier about not touching any service dogs until we're exactly sure what this dog's job is, and that maybe now is the time to do that. Because as you're saying, there's a time for work and there's a time for play, let's say.
Well, and the obvious thing, and maybe it's not quite as obvious, any person approaching a dog wants to ask that handler permission, the owner permission to touch that dog. And once that permission's been given, then approach the dog with an open hand, not just pet them over top of the head. Approach them with an open hand so they can smell your hand. And if they say, the dog says it's okay, when you'll see that in behavior, then it's okay. Otherwise, you want to not. But we encourage that. And quite often we'll be walking through a store and we'll say, he's friendly, you can pet him. So we'll take that part of it out.
Ask before you touch.
Ask before you touch.
It's good for everything. It's a good rule of thumb. I'm speaking with Captain Terry Benjamin. He is the director and co-founder of Lone Star Search and Rescue. You can find them online at lonestarsar.org. Talk to me about how this team breaks down. You have your dog, who I saw on the website, is Ranger?
Ranger.
All right. So, but then there's other jobs within that group to help you guys do your work. So how does the team break down, and who shows up to a place where someone needs to be found?
Our team is broken up into basically three separate areas. The first area being the canine, and that, you know, our canine team is run by my wife and co-founder, Michelle, and she makes all the decisions about training. She makes all the decisions, canine training. She makes all the decisions about what dogs are ready, and she certifies all the dogs within their discipline to be able to go out and do the job. So if a dog's not certified in, let's say, water or disaster, that dog's not going to go out. But when we do a call out, we'll call out everyone, because starting off, and the next area would be, we're all flankers. So we're all searchers, basically.
Is that, I saw that term. That was really the one that I couldn't figure out. Flanker, you were just out there looking. You have the dog team doing their thing, and the flanker is just on your sides taking a look?
No. The flanker, a dog team, is a and we'll say three person, the dog being one of those, but it is the dog handler, the dog, and then a flanker. And the flanker's responsibility is the safety of the dog and handler first. Navigation, medical, once we find the victim, then medical aid and coordinating all the rescue efforts. So once the dog and handler find their victim, then the flanker takes over. And that flanker, that position is so very important. In fact, with one without the other doesn't work. Mm. And sometimes we'll take law enforcement or we'll take fire with us, but they don't always understand those roles. So communications, navigation, safety, and then victim packaging.
Does having a lot of people around kind of mess with the dog? Because you're talking about a three-person dynamic, and the team runs a very specific way. If you add police officers that they're not familiar with, or firefighters they're not familiar with, or civilian searchers, does it kind of mess with the dog? Do you guys need to be on your own?
Well, it only messes with the dogs if they're on a general search. So if we tell them to go, we can tell the dog to go out and find everybody out there. The dog's going to go out and find everybody, right? If we tell them to go find a specific person, those dogs are just hyper-focused, and they are looking for that one person and that one scent. So it doesn't matter. When we train with a whole bunch of people around just to take that away from, that stigma away from, or that, you know, it's a desensitization.
You have the flanker, and then you have a command post that you set up.
Absolutely. And that's where our radios are based out of, all the communications to and from the handler or the canine team. And again, the flanker will handle all of that. But that also has a we have a rehab area for the dogs. It's an air-conditioned trailer or, you know, command post. And so we can do everything. We have a moving map. We have video. We have computers. We have a repeater system for our radio, so we've got really good distance. So everything will run out of that, and then whoever our law enforcement or fire department contact is will be in there with us so that they can see an update as to how the search is going.
At least from the command post and flanker positions, is this about eliminating areas that you have been in? When they are tracking what you're doing, is that kind of what they're focused on? Because for the dog team, we're going where the dog wants to go or whatever you notice as a tracker. For people on the periphery, the flankers and the people in the command center, what is the most important thing that they do?
Well, each dog is given a sector to search. When they're given that sector, they're expected to search that sector. And if they can't search that sector, let us know why or what part of that sector they can't search. So remember, there's only one victim out there. So the rest of the dogs, the one that doesn't find, is going to have an area that we eliminate.
Okay.
So a part of that is eliminating the area and saying, there is no victim here, let's move on to the next one. And we start with the highest probability of detection and move out from there.
Do you send other people to different places? You're talking about your probabilities. So as professionals, you guys know this is probably where we should start. But is there a great way or an equation you guys use to send other people somewhere else to try and get the maximum search possible, let's say?
Each search is different. And that depends on the area, the weather, a lot of things. So sometimes what we'll do is we'll send people out to the peripherals and set up a perimeter so that if the victim moves across that perimeter, we can see that. But we'll also send out a hasty team to hit the highest likely or the area of highest probability, so a trail. Or a playground if we're looking for a kid, or some other areas that might attract the victim to it.
Are you looking for members to be a part of this organization? Do you already have your team set? If somebody is interested in being a part of something like this, how do they get that started?
We are always looking for good members. We are a mission of First Baptist Wiley. We are funded through the church, through donations, partially through the church. But we want people in the community to come out and be part of us. This is a dedication above what most people have ever been part of. So it's every week, 3 or 4 hours a weekend to spend time out there and training and learning to do that. We're expected to be just as professional as law enforcement and fire, except nobody pays us to do it. It's all volunteer. We don't charge the families or the victim. We don't charge law enforcement. So we pay all our own bills. Our handlers pay for their dogs, their vet bills, all the other costs associated. So there's a big dedication to this thing. But yeah, we want great people that want to do this.
So they can show up and just figure out how they can help the organization. I was laughing before we started because you have training sessions almost every Saturday, and you can find details online about those. But you said that you're always anxious to get somebody out and to be a victim, and which I thought was really funny. But that's kind of how you start with the organization, right?
Right. We invite people to come out and hide for the dogs. We always need fresh people for the dogs to find. They get bored in finding us all the time. So it's nice to have new people that want to volunteer and go hide for the dogs. And it's fun for those volunteers because they get to see what the dogs do and how much fun they have when they find you, because it's a big, big party.
It does sound like the best game of hide-and-go-seek that somebody can do. I mean, do you have a problem with people just wanting to come out and kind of just play with the dogs on these training sessions? I could see a lot of people just being like, this is going to be great. I'm going to get found by these dogs, and it's going to be a lot of fun, as opposed to the serious work that you guys are doing. I mean, this is serious, serious stuff.
We want both. We're looking for good members. We want people that want to be dedicated to something bigger than themselves. But we also need victims that just want to come hide for the dogs. And they can come out once, or they can come out 100 times. These dogs need people to find, and we need that because the dogs train and train and train, and the 3 hours that we spend on the weekend is just a small part of the training these dogs go through. So yeah, we need lots of people, and we'd love to have everybody come out and hide for them and be victims and get to see the dogs working. Now, it's hot sometimes, it's cold sometimes, it's wet sometimes, so you need to come prepared, but it's always a lot of fun.
All right, we are running out of time, but real quick, I gotta ask about Ranger. Tell me about your dog.
Ranger is a 7-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback. He's a rescue. He's a rescue doing rescue. Ranger is a Rhodesian whose ridge never presented. And in a Ridgeback, if the ridge doesn't present, they have no value. Hmm. He was found by a wonderful young lady. I was in a McDonald's parking lot having breakfast after seeing the dentist one morning. And she pulled up and she said, I have search and rescue on my truck. And she said, do you rescue dogs? And I said, no, ma'am, we rescue people using dogs. And she held up this little gangly, long-legged puppy and said, well, I found him running across the parking lot, and I'm going to have to take him to the shelter. Well, there's some tests that we can do that tells us if a dog's got the aptitude to be a search dog. Although, you know, we all have great pets, about 1 in 1,000 can do this job or have the aptitude to do this job. And we're looking for certain skills within those dogs. And Ranger had that aptitude. Hmm. And sure enough, he's becoming just an exceptional search dog. I'd like to take all the credit for it, but he's an amazing dog, and he makes me look good all the time.
1 in 1,000.
1 in 1,000.
I've been speaking with Captain Terry Benjamin. He is a battalion commander for the Texas State Guard. He is also the director and co-founder of Lone Star Search and Rescue. You can find them online at lonestarsar.org. Sir, it was great speaking with you. I really appreciate your time today.
Nick, thank you so much. We appreciate you letting us talk about Lone Star and Texas State Guard.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.